May it please the court, my name is James Helmer. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I represent the relator, Michael DeCourt, in this matter. The principal issue which we present to this court concerns whether federal jurisdiction existed over the whistleblower's allegations in this case. This is ground that has been plowed often by this court. The test for determining federal court jurisdiction under the False Claims Act, the E-4 limitation, are well known in three parts, and I'd like to briefly discuss those three parts for our appeal. First, though, I need to advise the court that Mr. DeCourt was the senior lead engineer for systems on the Deepwater program. He was an employee of Lockheed Martin, who had entered into a joint venture with Northrop Grumman and formed a company called ICGS to build $27 billion worth of Coast Guard vessels. Mr. DeCourt was there at the meetings. He was there reviewing the documents. He was there working on the systems, principally the communication systems, but also at meetings where holes were discussed. He also was there and discovered that the certifications that were being issued by these companies were not accurate. The contracts were specific in terms of what was required to be performed, and he became concerned early on that those specifications were not being met. As a result, he began a process of going up his chain of command, letting them know that this isn't correct. He continued that in his investigation for several years, beginning in 2003. He took his complaints to all of his company management, including to his board of directors and the president of his company. He took them to government hotlines. He took them to government investigators. He took them to the Internet. He took them to the media. He took them to the Department of Justice, and he even took them to the United States Congress. Now, that's where the public disclosure comes into this case.
Are you speaking only of the Hulse?
I'm speaking
problem, or are you speaking of the other, the part that, the electronic part?
Yes, Your Honor. Originally, it was the electronic part, but as this process continued, it incorporated the Hulse in 2005 and 2006. As a result of Mr. DeCourt's whistleblowing efforts, Congress took an interest in this Deepwater program and the fact that they had spent $100 million on 8 patrol boats that perfectly performed prior to turning them over to the defendants and now are scrap heaps. Congress held a hearing in April, the middle of April of 07. But prior to that hearing, the court had already brought his lawsuit 7 months earlier. He had amended that lawsuit nearly 5 months earlier to discuss design problems with the Hulls, That's his second amended complaint. As a result of that, when the hearing was held in April 18th of 2007, DeCourt was one of the principal witnesses. Not about the Hulls, but the evidence in this case, which is undisputed, is he also brought the whole evidence to the congressional investigators that then became a basis for that hearing. Now, the trial court found that the congressional hearing was a public disclosure of Mr. DeCourt's allegations. And we suggested this court under its jurisprudence that that cannot be. He'd already made his allegations months before the congressional hearing. We think it was error for the court to find that that was a public disclosure of his allegations.
What? I mean, but he, I thought he testified before Congress that he really could not address the construction of these vessels.
Your Honor, you're correct that he deferred on when he was asked specifically about the Hulls.
And the way I read it, effectively said, I'm not qualified to answer those questions about the construction defects of these vessels.
Yes, Your Honor.
They're all about the electronic aspect of it. And that basically was Lockheed, right?
That was Lockheed. That's correct.
Lockheed has settled this case. They've settled.
Correct. But what Mr. DeCourt was on a panel, Your Honor, with two shipbuilding engineers, one from the Coast Guard and one from the United States Navy, who were going to address the hull issues. These were witnesses that Mr. DeCourt went out and scared up and brought to the attention of the congressional committee.
He scared them up.
Yeah, he scared them up. Yep. So our point, Your Honor, is simply that his suit could not have been based upon a public disclosure that happened after he had made these allegations. But even if you disagree with that, and the trial court did disagree with that, under E4, he still satisfies the original source test because in doing his research and making his contacts with the people that worked on this project, he accumulated a great deal of information that was non-public. He got information from a Coast Guard employee named De Armiento that never became public, that laid out all the hull problems. Mr. DeCourt took that along with the conversations he had with Lockheed Martin employees and Northrop Grumman employees and said, wait a minute, we're making certifications that these boats perform all the specifications. And here we have a list showing us that not only do they not perform, and not only have we certified this, but none of them perform.
I understood from the district court's opinion and finding that there were two episodes involving the hulls and the drive shaft. And the first one was about all Mr. DeCourt knew about that he reported before the hearing was cleared up by the drive shaft.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so the court found that he did not disclose any information or discover any information before the congressional hearing about the structural defect of the hulls, which is was the problem here, that the subcontractor had not strengthened the hull in lengthening it, and so that was never, Mr. DeCourt did not find that and did not disclose that before the congressional hearing, is what the district judge said. Now,
you're correct on that's what the district court judge said, but it's incorrect that that's what happened, Your Honor. And I'd like to cite you to two places in the record that will demonstrate that for you. The first is the Chief Congressional Investigator Fouché's declaration. And as he points out in his declarations, that it was DeCourt who shed the key evidence on the whole failures and their underlying causal design defects. The first problem with the shafts and the holes, Your Honor, concerned bad shafts. And that is not what we're discussing on this appeal. We're discussing the design problems with the holes. The judge focused on the first problem that occurred, and you're correct, that is what he said, but that's not what this appeal is about.
Now tell me what Mr. DeCourt was the original source of specifically what defects in the vessels?
Your Honor, we point out in our brief in a couple of places that what they call the section modulus, which is a term that means strength of the boat, that DeCourt had acquired information from the Coast Guard that was non-public, that he shared that with the Coast Guard. And also that when they lengthened the boat, they took 5 feet off the back of the boat and added 18 feet to it, so it was 13 feet longer. That took the center of the gravity of the boat and moved it from where it had been when the boat was originally designed back in the 80s. And as a result of that, that put, in the different steel they use in the rear of the boat, that put undue stress in the midsection of the boat. He also laid that out.
Telling me that he's the original source of all of that information that you just told me.
Your Honor, I'm telling you that he is the original source in that he collected this information and figured it out, presented it to the government along with his conclusions that he had personally seen the corners being cut by the defendants.
Now, where am I going to find in the record what you have just told me that he was the original source of? Which one of your complaints is that alleged?
It's alleged. Certainly, it's alleged in the Fifth Amendment complaint, Certainly, it's alleged in the summary judgment motion responses we filed, but it's also, Your Honor, alleged in another place before the congressional hearing.
The congressional hearing did not.
Those two items did, but Your Honor, as I was beginning to answer Judge Dennis's question, if you'll look at tab 16 in the excerpt, the record excerpts, tab 16 contains an email that Mr. DeCourt sent 2 months before the congressional hearing to NBC News. And in this email, the court can review it for itself, but in this email, he talks about the fact that the design flaws that he's uncovered are going to lead to the hull integrity problems. That was 2.5 months before the congressional hearing, and it's undisputed.
But wasn't that a very general statement about design flaws?
Yes.
It didn't specify what the flaws were, did it?
That statement does not, that there are design defects. But again, the details, that's what lawyers prove during a trial. That's not something that the relator is required to have all the details of proving his case at the time he makes his allegations. His allegation is that there are design defects, and there were design defects, and we would have proved them up had we been given the chance to do that. And he did disclose, he knew about them,
but the emails show that. The burden is not to prove that there were defects. We all know that. It's to prove that he was the original source.
Okay. Well, in the Reagan decision written by Judge Jolly, this court gave us some guidance on how to ascertain whether someone is an original source. And one of the tests that's set forth there is if the relator is responsible for sitting government agencies on the trail of fraud that they might not otherwise have discovered. Now, I may not have quoted that exactly, Judge Jolly, but I think that's pretty close to what you said back in 2004. This guy did that. And there should
be a lot closer than I could quote it.
Well, let me just say this. This is a de novo review of a summary judgment decision. And in a de novo review, you're supposed to be taking inferences in my client's favor, I believe. I believe that's the jurisprudence. And the district court doesn't give you a lot of help on this.
The burden is clearly on him to establish that there's no jurisdictional bar here. And that means that he's got to prove that he's the original source.
And that's what I think.
He's got to prove jurisdiction.
That's what I think Mr. Fouché's affidavit does for you, Your Honor, an affidavit that you won't find mentioned anywhere in the lower court's filings. You won't find any response by defense counsel in the lower court or before you that discredits the affidavit. Fouché was the lead investigator for the United States Congress. He met with Mr. DeCourt. He took Mr. DeCourt's information. And he doesn't use the word trail, but he's pretty close to that, Judge Jolly, using it in terms of what Mr. DeCourt contributed to this case.
My impression of this Fouché declaration was it basically referred to his help in trying to get witnesses together. But I did not see that he indicated any kind of original information that he supplied with respect to the mechanical issue. And the construction and design issues. But he just simply said that he was very helpful in the investigation by furnishing names of potential witnesses and so on.
Well,
he never declared that he had any actual knowledge about there being a hull and shaft design defect in any kind of original sense.
But you have to couple that with the fact that he's an insider that sees the company's cutting these corners. And nobody passed that information along to government except for Mr. DeCourt.
My view of the Fouché affidavit is that he does not assist in showing that he was the original. Mr. DeCourt was the original source of the specific information that you are contending.
I think, Your Honor, our point is that he should assist the court in showing that DeCourt was the individual who put the government on the trail of this fraud. That's the argument that we were trying to make there. If I could, I want to, since my time's about to go, I want to just say one thing about the guarantee issue. We moved for summary judgment on the guarantees. You will not find in this 8-million-page record any delivered, executed guarantee from the defendants in this case to the Coast Guard. They did not live up to their agreement. We move for partial summary judgment on that. There is no public disclosure on the guarantee issue. We came up with that on our own. The defendants undisputedly did not perform in this case.
You've saved some time for rebuttal, but I believe your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Taylor, we'll hear from you.
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is David Taylor, and I represent Northrop Grumman Shipbuilding, Inc. in this appeal, which is now known as Huntington Ingalls Incorporated. At council table with me is Mr. Greg Smith. Mr. Smith represents ICGS. Although I'll be arguing this morning, Mr. Smith's prepared to answer questions that might pertain to ICGS. In the event there are those questions, we reserve 2 minutes at the end of my argument for that purpose. I think it's important in this case to start by focusing on what the case is about and what the case is not about, because we heard at the beginning of Mr. DeCourt's argument a lot about what the case is not about. Initially, the case was all about the C4ISR work on the patrol boats, basically computers and communications. Mr. DeCourt personally participated in the C4ISR work, and his first two complaints in this case were limited to that C4ISR work. First complaint asserted a claim for that against Lockheed Martin, his employer. Second complaint expanded that claim to Northrop and ICGS, but both complaints strictly limited to ICGS. Those claims are not at issue here. The claims against Lockheed Martin were settled. The claims against Northrop Grumman and ICGS would be dismissed, and Mr. DeCourt does not appeal that dismissal. And for purposes of this appeal, there is no issue whether Mr. DeCourt is an original source on those C4ISR issues. We simply don't contest that it's not at all relevant. This case is not about the C4ISR claims. What happened here is Mr. DeCourt engaged in a series of opportunistic attempts to expand his claims, to assert claims that he had no personal involvement with and no personal knowledge about. Those claims related to the hull and the mechanical work on the boats, which Lockheed Martin had no involvement in, and Mr. DeCourt testified repeatedly he did not participate in. Over the course of 3 years, after those first two complaints related to C4SIR were filed, Mr. DeCourt sought to assert 5 different claims against Northrop Grumman and ICGS. The first time he did that occurred on December 4, 2006, and the history there is very interesting. On November 28th, Mr. DeCourt filed his first amended complaint on C4ISR issues. 2 days later, the Coast Guard announced that it was taking the boats out of service because of hull buckling and shaft misalignment issues. 4 days after that, and just 6 days after filing a first amended complaint that said nothing about hulls or shafts or anything other than C4ISR, Mr. DeCourt went into court and filed a second amended complaint, which for the first time made hull and shaft-related allegations. He asserted 3 claims, none of them related to any flaw in the hull design. The first claim was for allegedly not properly upgrading the engines. The second claim related to the use of what he called substandard shafts, so shafts that really weren't the right fit for the boat. And the third claim was for the failure to allegedly fix pre-existing damage to these hulls, damage that the boats had suffered when they were in service before they were delivered to the contractors. Those claims are laid out at paragraphs 79 through 81 of the second amended complaint. They say nothing about the design of the boats. Ultimately, all 3 of those claims would be dismissed, and Mr. DeCourt now acknowledges that all of those claims, although it took years of litigation and discovery to get there, were without merit and were baseless. Those claims are not at issue here. Fast forward about 2.5 years. The Department of Justice decides not to intervene in the case. The complaint is served on the defendants. Northrop Grumman moves to dismiss what is then the 4th amended complaint, including the 3 hull and shaft workmanship issues and the C4ISR claims. Mr. DeCourt, in response to that, files an amended complaint, his 5th amended complaint. And that is the first time that he alleges that there was a defect in the design of the hulls of the boats. This is in late 2009. That claim, especially as it is elucidated through discovery and then preparation for trial, clearly is identical to allegations that Coast Guard employees made 2.5 years before the Fifth Amended complaint during a congressional hearing, i.e. allegations that there was a design flaw in the lengthening of the boats that caused both the hull buckling and the shaft misalignments.
My understanding is counsel is saying that information from the, or maybe I'm mistaken, maybe he's talking about the shaft thing, but I think he's trying to take credit for what the Coast Guard came up with and saying that he was the one that provided that to the Coast Guard. Would you address that?
I will, and I think that is exactly what Mr. DeCourt's trying to do here. I think the question I would have, if I were listening to this, I would ask this. What information does Mr. DeCourt claim to be an original source of, and how did he get direct and independent knowledge of that information? This, with respect to the original source issue, this is a case about a complete failure of proof. The district court applied classic summary judgment law to that claim. Mr. DeCourt had an obligation on summary judgment to come forward with evidence showing that he had direct and independent knowledge of the defective hull design claim, not of substandard shafts, not of C4ISR, but of the defective hull design claim. And he failed to do so. He produced no evidence showing what information he learned about the defective hull design claim and how he learned it.
So to get to the specific question, he didn't provide that type of information. He either did or did not provide that type of information to the Coast Guard prior to the time that, that you say that the Coast Guard had this in their collective mind.
He did not. The undisputed evidence is that Coast Guard engineers developed this theory about a design defect back in 2004. That's what Mr. Sampson testified to in front of Congress. That's what the evidence showed. Mr. DeCourt talks a lot about information he or help he may have provided to a congressional staffer, Mr. Fouché. The most that says, generously reading it in Mr. DeCourt's favor, is that he helped one government agency or branch figure out who to talk to find out what the Coast Guard, another agency, already knew. And that is not direct and independent knowledge, clearly. The cases have repeatedly addressed this in the Fifth Circuit and elsewhere and have said that direct and independent knowledge means firsthand knowledge of the fraud. For example, the Laird case gave a series of examples of what is firsthand knowledge. It is the nurses who see the doctors perform and bill for the fraudulent procedures. It is the engineer who sees the plans for a product and realizes with his own eyes and his own understanding that there is a defect in the product. Mr. DeCourt doesn't come close to fitting that model. And the interesting thing about the record here is if Mr. DeCourt were an original source of any information relating to the defective hull design claim, it would be easy for him to bring that evidence forward. That kind of information is uniquely in his knowledge. He could say, I learned X on Y date, and I learned it from this person or in this way, and therefore I am an original source. He should have that readily at hand. And yet you can read the record over and over again, and there is nothing like that. The only things he points to, first of all, he points to some emails that he received from a Lockheed employee and a Coast Guard employee. Those are clearly all secondhand information. Not one of them relates to information that he observed firsthand. The information also really doesn't say anything about that defective hull design claim. All it really says is the boats are having hull buckling problems, and that was public knowledge since it began back in 2004. But in any event, he does not have direct and independent knowledge of that information. He also, I've mentioned the Fouché Declaration, no evidence there that he has direct and independent knowledge relating to anything as to his hull design claim. It's also, I think, important to to look here at what the record does say, because we took Mr. DeCourt's deposition, and there was extensive testimony from him about his lack of knowledge about HM&E issues and the fact that he drew on the congressional testimony for his hull design claim. With respect to his lack of knowledge regarding HME matters, he admitted he had no involvement in the HME work. He admitted that it wasn't his responsibility. He was not involved in the design of the hull extension. In fact, he didn't even start working on the C4ISR aspects of the project until the first boat had already been delivered and was already being worked on. And he left the project just 7 months later before that boat was even delivered. So it was a relatively short window. It was focused on C4ISR. He said he didn't know anything about HM&E. And interestingly, at the close of discovery, we asked Mr. DeCourt, what is the defect in the design of the boat? He had no idea. He couldn't tell us. We provided the court with that deposition testimony. He still, at that late date, couldn't say anything about what the design defect was.
At that late date, when was that now?
That was at the end of discovery in June of 2010. So it was well after the events, the complaints were filed here and the discovery was almost ready to expire. All he knew was the publicly disclosed fact that the hulls had buckling problems and there had been shaft misalignments. Secondly, we asked him, well, how did you learn these things? You know, what's the basis for these things? And he said, as to the fact that the hull buckling and shaft misalignments occurred, it was the news media and conversations with an employee of Lockheed and the Coast Guard, all secondhand. With respect to the design defect, he testified, and we've given the court this testimony on multiple occasions, that he drew on the congressional hearing for that information, saying that the hearing was very helpful in connecting the dots and understanding that rather than the workmanship issues that he had alleged in his second amended complaint that related sort of separately to the shafts and the hulls, that in fact there might be a single design issue that caused both of them. In other words, a single source of both sets of problems. Mr. DeCourt had an obligation here on summary judgment to come forward with evidence sufficient to create a genuine issue of material fact on the original source issue, and he simply failed to do so. And that's what that was the reason the court granted summary judgment. There's nothing in the record contrary to that. And Mr. DeCourt's attempts to draw on information here to try to create the appearance of such facts, once you look closely at those, doesn't hold up. I want to talk briefly about the argument that Mr. DeCourt has made that his claims are not based on the congressional hearing because he included the word design in his second amended complaint. The district court termed that argument disingenuous, and I think a reading of the two complaints, the fifth amended complaint and the second, supports the district court's finding there. If you look at the fifth amended complaint, it lays out in several paragraphs the basics of the design claim. It says Northrop and ICGS allegedly knew that there was a flaw in the design. They concealed that flaw from the Coast Guard and delivered the boats anyhow. As discovery went forward in the case, it became clear that that claim turned on a number of things, including the premise that there was a single cause of both the hull buckling and the shaft misalignments, the fact that the allegation that it was a defective design, a failure to strengthen the hull, the allegation that it was concealed or made more difficult to discover because the subcontractor had made an error in the section modulus calculation, a whole series of details, all of which were identical to the congressional testimony that occurred back in 2007. If you look at the second amended complaint, none of that information is in there. None of that information. Mr. DeCourt's entire argument depends on the fact that in the introduction he used the word design. That word appears to refer to the C4ISR design issues, but in any event, it does nothing, as the court found below, to put anybody on notice of this defective hull design claim that he was asserting in the fifth amended complaint. Mr. DeCourt also argues that in his brief, that the allegations that he's made in his Fifth Amendment complaint are only barred if they are derived in some way from the congressional testimony, if you can trace them through like the fruits of the poisonous tree. That's not the law. Repeatedly, this court has held that allegations in a QI-TAM complaint are based on the allegations in a publicly disclosed allegations if they are the same as those allegations. That's what the court held in Reagan. It's what the court held in Freed and multiple other cases. That's also what virtually every other circuit court of appeals has held. And clearly, Mr. DeCourt indeed admits that his allegations in the Fifth Amendment complaint are essentially the same as the allegations that were aired at the congressional hearing. He asked the court to follow a Fourth Circuit decision, the Siller case, which has been rejected by every other circuit court that has considered it and which has not been followed by any other circuit court of appeals. Every other circuit court that has looked at this issue has essentially applied the same as test to look at whether or not the allegations are the same as the public allegations to figure out whether they have been publicly disclosed. That's the First Circuit, the Second Circuit, the Third Circuit, the Sixth Circuit, Seventh, Eighth, Ninth, Tenth, and D.C. circuits have all held, in contrary to Siller, that as long as the allegations are essentially the same, then they are to be deemed based upon. I had said we wanted to save 2 minutes if there were questions for ICGS. I want to ask the panel if they have questions. Otherwise, I'll proceed.
We have no questions.
Okay. Let me just then say at the end here that Mr. DeCourt, with respect to the hull, the defective hull design allegations, is not an original source, and the public disclosure bar does and should apply to those claims. The public disclosure bar is designed to prevent opportunistic latecomers from profiting from allegations of fraud that have been publicly disclosed. With respect to the defective hull design claims, Mr. DeCourt fits squarely within that definition. He is an opportunistic latecomer. He added his first hull and shaft claims in response to the public announcement by the Coast Guard that there are hull and shaft problems with the boats. He added the defective hull design claim when his workmanship claims appeared to be imperiled on a motion to dismiss. And he is virtually the definition of an opportunistic latecomer with respect to the defective hull design claims. I'll spend my last minute, if it's with the court's permission, on the fraudulent inducement claim. The district court refused to grant summary judgment in favor of Mr. DeCourt on that claim for two reasons. First of all, there was no support for it, and there was substantial contrary support. Therefore, there was a genuine issue of material fact. Namely, the agreements that ICGS entered with the Coast Guard only called for Northrop and Lockheed to execute the form of guarantee that was included in the documents upon request of the Coast Guard. There was no request by the Coast Guard, and in fact, Northrop and Lockheed have repeatedly said and promised in other contexts that they guarantee ICGS's obligations. In addition, at the time Mr. DeCourt moved for summary judgment on that, that was an unpled claim. For all the reasons that I've discussed, we'd ask the court to affirm all of the rulings that are challenged by Mr. DeCourt and affirm judgment in favor of Northrop and ICGS.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you.
Mr. Helmer, you have some time for rebuttal.
The false claim in this case is not that there are bad holes on these boats. The false claim in this case is that these defendants certified that all of the specifications of the contract had been met. That is what DeCourt fingered in his second amended complaint. He does use the word design deficiencies regarding the holes in his second amended complaint. I take issue with counsel saying that this was something that some late idea that came to Mr. DeCourt. In 05 and 06, he was telling anybody that would listen about this problem. And the documents, exhibit excerpt 16, and the record will show that. And as far as Mr. Fouché's declaration, Your Honor, again, this is not to show that Mr. DeCourt has some independent knowledge. It's to show that under this Court's test for original source, that he put the government on the trail of this fraud. The government being, in this case, the United States Congress. Mr. Fouché says with...
How does that fit into the requirement of original source?
Your Honor, the Reagan case says that a way to show you have independent and direct knowledge is to demonstrate that the investigation or experience of the relator translated into putting a government agency on the trail of fraud. Now I am quoting. And that is what Mr. Fouché's declaration says. Without Mr. DeCourt's assistance and early direction, our investigation may have missed key evidence that shed light on the 123 hole failures and their underlying causal design defects.
Well,
that's
but
why
they were already. What is that saying? It seems like that is saying he was helpful to us. If not for him, we may have missed something. How does without him, we may have missed something translate into? He's the one that put us on the trail.
Well, he doesn't
Maybe.
He doesn't use the word trail, Your Honor, but as I said...
It's kind of like the Indians went that away or something like that. But is that putting him on the trail? It sounds like they were already investigating, right?
Because Mr. DeCourt had raised such a stir about this, that's why they were having the congressional hearing in the first place. But my point, Your Honor, is that as Mr. DeCourt was working with his government to bring this to their attention, and as this Court is considering this summary judgment decision, my understanding is any inferences that favor Mr. DeCourt should be given to him in your de novo review of this. And certainly an inference from Mr. Fouché's declaration is that it's Mr. DeCourt that's the guy that's helping make sure Congress does what it needs to do. And, in fact, Congress did. They changed the law as a result of this hearing. There are no more ICGSs bidding on Coast Guard projects. That's been changed since 2010.
He's the original source of the legislation?
He may be, Your Honor. I may be the original source of some of that legislation, but that's an argument for another day. I guess I would say this. There were 5 amended complaints in this case. All 5 of them came before any discovery. The 8 million documents we got in discovery were produced to us either at the close of the discovery cutoff or after the discovery cutoff. Those were attempts to help focus the parties in the case and focus down the evidence, but that's all they were, is adding details. The design issue was raised by Mr. DeCourt in his second amended complaint before the public disclosure. It's there. That Mr. Fouché's affidavit says what it says. The email to NBC News 2 months before the congressional hearing says what it says. And, Your Honor, with all due respect, your opinion in the Reagan case says what it says, and that's what we're trying to apply here, is the help that you gave counsel in understanding how to demonstrate who's an independent, who has independent and direct knowledge. Now, let me just say one thing about direct knowledge. It is not the law that you have to have an eyewitness to the fraud to bring a False Claims Act case. That is not the law. It was never law. Even back in 1863, that wasn't the law. Instead, what Congress did in 86 was to take away the government knowledge bar and add a requirement here that the relator contribute something to this case. And Mr. DeCourt clearly is a contributor. Does he know all the facts of whole design and whole engineering? No, absolutely not. Did he get some help from Coast Guard people? Yes, it was non-public help. That wasn't something that was announced to the newspapers. He went out and dug that up. In fact, some of those Coast Guard officials were disciplined for helping Mr. DeCourt.
Okay, Mr. Hellman, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Your argument in hand. We call the next case of the day.